Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Post-show time, and let me tell you something, New York Rick. Last week, around Wednesday evening, I was thinking of Crust First. I was dreaming. I was foaming of the mouth thinking of Crust First. Why? Because it was Yom Kippur and I was fasting, and I was so freaking hungry. I was just thinking, oh, Crust First, Crust First. I would love to have some crust right now. I'd do anything for some crust. So I was thinking about this program, which, by the way, is just taking the ESPN world by storm. Everyone is talking about it. People are coming up to me and saying, you know, forget about your other show. Just do the post show. Do a post show of a nothing show. The post show should be the show. That's how big it's getting. Would you believe it?
I will believe it. And I'm heading to Bristol tomorrow.
Yes.
Tonight, for tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
I'm expecting to see the cafeteria eating their pizza crust first.
Crust first. They're going to swarm you. They're going to ask you what it's like to be on this program in this studio working with the great Jake back there. Everyone,
I'm ready,
is going to be talking about you. I mean, I heard that they're going to do one of those, like, State of the Union addresses on campus for the long-awaited, much-anticipated arrival, the debut of One New York Rick. Wow.
I'm here, people.
This is like when – who's like an Uber prospect that got called up from single A all the way to the majors?
Oh, wrong sport for me. Yeah. I gotta abstain from this one.
Yeah. I mean, there have been Uber prospects that have been called up over the years, of course, but I'm just trying to think of one who people talked about all the way from when they were in the – I guess like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when he gets called up.
I'll take
– would be one. And this is what it feels like when you will finally step foot in Bristol. Who would have thought?
It's going to be magical.
Who would have thought? Unbelievable. Did you fast on Yom Kippur?
No, I did not.
I got to tell you, every year when I do the fasting, 25 hours for people that don't know, it's the Day of Atonement. I try not to go on my phone. I don't use the phone. In fact, you called me while I was in synagogue.
That's where you were.
Yes.
Okay.
And I tried to abstain. However, the John Jones news broke. But the thing is, I have this appreciation for fighters every day of the year.
Yeah.
But mostly on that day because of the weight cutting and then they have to go fight. I mean, I was sick afterwards. My head was hurting. It's just a mess.
Yeah, it is not a comfortable way to be.
I ate too much too quickly the night before, as my friend Jake is reminding me. And he's so lonely back there. There's no one for him to talk to. We used to have a crew of 10 people. He talks to me, but no one can hear him. That's how pathetic this whole situation is.
Shouting into the void.
He signed me up for FanDuel yesterday.
Okay.
He picked the worst team. I told him to pick Bills players. Bills win. Doesn't get any
of them
scored
any
on the squad. He picks the Cowboys. I mean, what a joke. What an
absolute
joke. Jake
got to step it up on the FanDuel.
Okay, so we have a lot to talk about, New York Rick. First things first, press conference last week. What'd you think?
Conor McGregor is a force, as I said leading into it. I thought he was going to deliver no matter what. There was really no way that he wouldn't. Obviously an oversight not to have fans there, but understandable for certain security reasons. He delivered. He carried that press conference. Habib didn't contribute much, but I think that was kind of his role in that.
Jake, you're breathing into the – I hear you. Your microphone is – this guy is breathing into the microphone. I was like, how long am I going to let this go? And he's just like breathing into the microphone. He needs you back there. Anyway, go
okay,
ahead,
back on
please.
Track. Conor McGregor.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah,
here
yep.
we go.
Do you think the fact that there were no fans dramatically made the press conference less entertaining than it could have been, should have been?
Not even a shadow of a doubt.
Really? Because I actually thought it was just as good.
No, every time Conor lands one of those, to just hear the raucous crowd cheer would have just elevated it to the next level. It would have kept building. I think it kind of stayed at an elevated level. It was certainly good. As I said, he delivered like I expected him to, but he would have just fed off that crowd and built the momentum and kept going.
Do you not think it would have been like a little too out of control with the fans?
Nope.
You think it just would have been incredible?
It would have been incredible.
One of the greatest scenes
ever. The environment was perfectly set up for it. It wasn't like the fans were on top of them. They would have been fine and they would have been able, Conor would have been able to play to them instead of, you know, assuming that they're kind of following along. He would have actually had that feedback in real time. I think it would have elevated it to a next level. But I understand why, you know, this particularly charged situation, you'd want to have control over it for the, you know, for the sake of that. But the fans would have taken it there.
Surely you're not surprised that he talked about Dagestan and Chechnya and Putin. Did he ever go too far across the line?
There is no line.
There is no line. It does not exist.
I mean, there's a line, but...
What about Tony McGregor saying on the show, Khabib crossed the line? I was like, Tony, I love you, buddy, but
yeah,
that might be a stretch.
How about that? I was plus.
And then how about him questioning Khabib's dad's parental skills? I mean, that
and,
was just incredible.
Wondering how Habib even got to this fight, how he belongs.
He's an amateur.
He's just nobody. Tony's one of a kind. But there's a line, but I don't think it's been crossed in any recent history. I think there is a line, but I wasn't particularly concerned about that. Obviously, Conor McGregor does his research, as he always does. He's always very well prepared for these types of things. I don't think we've met the person yet who's equally prepared, so it always gives him a leg up. He always has an advantage heading into this.
Here's the difference between Conor and other fighters. Other fighters say, oh, it's a press conference. Okay, let me sit back and answer whatever is asked of me, and guess what? That's not a bad thing.
No.
That's not a wrong approach. He actually prepares for the test.
Well,
he had not to say that he has his answers prepared, but he has information. He does his research. Even when he talks about his opponents, he knows about their reach and their height and their record and what they've done in their last fights and what rounds they won. It's like on a manic level. It's on a different level. It's unlike anything I have personally ever seen in fight sports.
Yeah, and it is truly a testament to him, and it's no secret, it's no surprise that he's so successful because of the way he prepares just for this. Imagine what he's doing every time he steps into the cage. Imagine the preparation and the dedication that he has to that, when this is just the ancillary part of it, and he's this prepared. I would also say that he carried it solo, but Khabib played his part there. Like, that was what he was supposed to do. That it was who he was supposed to be in this side of it. Because if he comes out and tries too hard to push some kind of persona or narrative or thing that is clearly not where he's comfortable and where he's outside of, I think it would have come off as fake. He was who he was, and I think he played his part the way he was supposed to.
So Thursday night, I was on SportsCenter, cheap plug, and I scored a 10-7 in favor of Conor.
No doubt.
But you know what? I went home that night, and I watched it. And I actually thought Khabib did better than I thought live. I couldn't really see him.
Yeah.
I thought the only time he got riled up is when he started talking about Putin.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, now he's... I thought he harped too much on the bus, send me a message. I think he stayed too long on that.
And Conor played off that.
But I don't think, A, Khabib was rattled. And I don't think, B, some people were saying, like, look at Conor's behavior. He was trying too hard to get under his skin, and he wasn't. And so he was getting riled up as a result. I think that was the Conor that we expected. We've seen that Conor before, and I don't necessarily, in the end, I would give, if I was scoring this, you know, like a fight, I would give 10-9, maybe 10-8.5 for Conor, but I don't think it was the 10-7 that I thought it was.
Well, this was set up to be that. This was what this is supposed to be. There was no circumstance where Khabib comes in there and takes it over.
He can't. It's not his mother tongue.
This is not it. This is not the situation. In the fight, that's where he has the control, and that's where he will ultimately be in the driver's seat. For a press conference, that's Conor McGregor's territory. And you touched on it earlier, talking about him being prepared. But beyond prepared, he doesn't just answer questions. He doesn't just field the questions and give you the response. He says what he wants to say. He brings up proper 12. He gives you the messages that he's been thinking about and wants to give. He's not only responding to this specific thing. He has a game plan going into this, the same way he has a game plan going into a fight. I thought he executed his game plan. The world was watching, and he excelled.
A lot of people asked me why I didn't ask a question at the press conference. The reason for that was, we had a setup to interview them. Didn't come to fruition because I think they were very heated afterwards. They left. They didn't talk to anyone. But I wanted to make sure that I got there immediately after the stare down. So I was off to the side. I wasn't where they were rotating the microphone. I didn't even know that Kristaps Porzingis was in the house. I would have been swooning.
You missed it.
But what was interesting was I was far back, and I was – a few feet away from Ali Abdelaziz.
Right.
And I could tell that he was kind of like a cage animal. He was very sort of in tune with what was going on and obviously very interested and a little heated. What was interesting was both guys came with big entourages,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't see them there. Both entourages were on opposite sides of Radio City, locked in rooms with police in front of them. They weren't allowed to come out. Each guy was allowed, I think, one or two representatives. Ali was obviously with Khabib, but like the Kavanaughs and the Danises of the world on this side, they were all in a room watching it on TV. They weren't allowed to come out. So, and I thought the visual of the police when they squared off was incredible. It reminded me a little bit of Mike Tyson, Lennox Lewis.
Absolutely.
When they were in the middle of them. It was just amazing. It was a nice touch, but there was a ton of police all over that place. So I understand why they did it for security reasons. Ali's there. I'm wondering, is he going to say something? He's going to do something. He's been very vocal about Connor. He doesn't. Connor doesn't address him. And then they square off, and then he says, why does this guy have two fake belts? And he may have thrown in a profanity. And then Ali.
And then Connor lobs, responds.
Excuse me. Connor responds, lobs a couple of grenades his way. And this has become the most talked about thing of the press conference.
It has.
Incredible.
You know what? It's fair. It's all part of the game, and it's just adding attention to this. It's just adding to this growing sense that these two don't like each other. Connor doesn't like Ali. Ali doesn't like John. There's every part of this has the makings of the drama that is required for a true like feud, for a true battle, something that Conor McGregor needs at this point. He's been away for a long time. He's coming into this fight and now has that renewed interest through the authenticity of this.
The tension in Vegas next week is going to be nuts because I understand the current plan is to have a second press conference, this one open to the fans. And so if it's late enough to where the Irish are there and who knows, because the thing about New York that would have been so great, there's so many Russian fans here.
Yeah.
There's so many Irish fans here. I don't know if those people are going to be
some
in
of them
Las Vegas.
Posing as media and asking questions.
Yeah. I mean, there were some embarrassing ones. Holy smokes. But I don't know. The scene outside was hectic. People were hoping to.
Did they buy proper 12? Were there people lined up?
I didn't
up
see
with
people
it?
With proper 12. I don't frequent. Do you frequent? Like, have you seen it anywhere?
I haven't, but I don't drink, so I haven't walked into.
But it seems like everyone's just glowing about that thing.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Pete's saying it's a sensation in Ireland.
How about our friend Brian Axelrod being a part of it?
Yeah.
I've even reached out to him. Can't even get a reply. That's how big this whole thing is.
Busy.
Anyway, the whole thing was nuts. To me, my favorite part of the whole thing was Dana saying, get Connor's belts. Get Connor's belts.
The man wants his belts.
Don't worry. It's coming. It's coming. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Get Connor's belts. It's coming. It's coming.
Connor, he called for the cups and Dave.
Run.
Dave went and got the cups.
Unbelievable.
But he was controlling the room.
He runs that show.
He had everything
that podium,
under his.
He should be on that podium. He should be the guy in the middle. What is that thing called? Is that a podium?
A dais.
He should be the guy standing there.
Look at this.
Interesting. No tie. Very rarely.
Great look.
Yeah.
Thought it was a fantastic look.
I mean, look at that.
The way he walks out, just stalking.
There's a clip. There's the police. There's a clip of him talking to Khabib.
Now, because of the lack of kind of energy in the room from what the fans would have been giving, the police very like, you know, stoic and stiff. It didn't exactly have that, you know, when you get a boxing stare down like this, there's 150 people on that stage, everybody being separated. So it didn't quite get to that level, with the police and the boxing-esque scene.
Right.
But it still felt the gravity was still there.
It was almost like watching a TV show.
Oh yeah.
Because you're on a set and there's insanity happening. But it was super quiet.
You know what? That's the perfect description of it. It was a TV set version of a press conference.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
And they were facing the back. The media was facing the seat. So we got to see the empty chairs. They didn't really get a scope. Like they were sort of like if the stage was here, their backs were towards the audience. So it's not like – but it's a big – I mean, this is Radio City Music Hall. This is one of the most iconic theaters in North America, maybe the world, right? It's big. And so it was a little just hollow
in
there.
But
he did an amazing job of bringing up the energy. He really did.
The visual even gives off that. It just felt a little bit hollow, but Connor brought what was necessary to kind of fill it as much as he could.
So in the end, Dana's saying the morning of the press conference trending towards 2.5. I was the one who was very vocal about 2. I don't think 2.
I don't know what that means.
I don't think 2.5. No way. First of all, who's ordering pay-per-view in 2018 3 weeks before?
Well, that's the thing. What are these metrics based on? What is 2.5 based on? What could you be possibly reading at this moment right now? Now, obviously, they've done enough pay-per-views where they can go, okay, we're looking at this. This is the number of engagements on social media. This is the number of people who have ordered already and maybe do some kind of forecasting. But this seems like such a very specific pay-per-view, a very specific instance right now with this Conor McGregor and Khabib fight, I don't know how you would be able to measure that. I don't know how you would be able to.
I still think it's going to be tough to get two at this juncture. They're just not doing a lot. You see the kind of impact they have when they do something.
Yeah, it's huge.
So we'll see what happens in the next 12 days or so. It's unbelievable that it's already here, right?
It's here.
It's crazy.
I think this will be the start of where we see it increase.
But that was a home run.
Absolutely.
Make no mistake about it. I saw some people rolling their eyes and this. You loved every second of it. And there was, what was there, like 500,000 people watching on YouTube concurrent?
Yeah.
That's insane.
What could have made it better? What could he have done? Like, he did everything he could do to draw the attention needed. He dropped all the lines that he needed to drop. He's promoting the whiskey. Every single part of that was covered and had the attention that he was after.
He got you thinking about, like, the politics stuff. Like, it was just... There was so much to take away from that press conference.
Yeah.
There was so much to peel off of it. You know what I mean? It wasn't just two guys, you know, just sitting there answering questions.
Saying,
oh,
I'm
going to
knock you out, this and that. There was real animosity there. There was real storytelling, and Conor carried the load.
And Conor is clearly still the featherweight and lightweight champion of the UFC.
Yes.
He said Khabib beat a real estate agent. All right, so that was the press conference. Also of note, last week, John Jones, 15 months. He's had a lot of big wins in the UFC. I think this might have been one of his biggest.
That's right.
Because no one, remember the day, I think it was August 22nd, when this news came out that he popped again. We were at Mayweather-McGregor. We were in the media room. We all thought he's gone for at minimum 2 years.
Yeah.
Maximum four. He ends up getting less than two. He ends up getting a random number in 15 months. And
well, it was reduced based on,
I know, it's just
certain
weird.
Things.
The whole thing
yeah.
is just weird. But anyhow, massive victory, right?
The biggest victory of his career, no doubt about it.
Nuts.
He will be back, still in his fighting prime, and ready. It seems like he's itching. He's been, you know, putting the Instagram videos out, training. It's immeasurable what kind of injection John Jones could give to, like, the pay-per-view business, the UFC right now.
But what about USADA?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. And I think that question's already one that has been on people's mind even before the John Jones thing.
Yeah.
Just we see Barnett, we see Verdum, we see Lyoto Machida, all these guys who are involved with USADA, Yoel Romero, and some of them not even being said to have taken the things that they were said to have been taken, that it was a tainted supplement situation or one thing or another. Is it still useful is the question. And I think regardless of this John Jones, case, which went to arbitration.
Yeah.
The question is USADA helping or hurting the case of the fighters in this?
I don't like that arbitration was secret.
Yeah.
I think that should have been made public. This thing about the snitching is very interesting.
Yeah.
What did a manager texted me and he said he thought Malky did a good job of explaining that on the show. Did you hear him talk about it? And if so, what did you think of him? Because I thought that, you know, when he said, like, I didn't read the whole thing, like, I think his initial answer was good, but then there were some holes that could be poked.
Yeah,
afterwards.
I mean, according to the letter of the law, according to what's in the actual text, it seems like there has to be a way for John Jones to provide information going forward.
Yeah.
Not just things that have been provided in the past, and it has to be useful to USADA, and it can't be about himself. It's going to be about other people who are involved with performance enhancers or illegal substances, according to the sport. So I think Malky answered it as best he possibly could at this moment. And he said he has to go back.
Yeah.
So
one fighter actually told me who's been involved in this that he was offered that deal and turned it down.
That having that said now about John Jones is something he's going to have to deal with.
He has to address this now.
This is a new layer that he will have to work with. Whether he addresses it, whether he comes out in front of it and addresses it is something that remains to be seen. But that will be something that other fighters will be looking at him with a critical eye now. Other people in the media will be asking him about. He has to have come to the understanding in settling it this way that he's willing to take that on.
He needs to clear this up.
Yeah,
he needs to address this. Among the, he hasn't done a single interview since.
No,
you know the initial
Malky
news
says there's a big one coming.
Yeah,
so.
let's see. But I think he has to address this. When it came out October 28th, everyone said November 3rd, right?
Of course.
Oh, it's obvious. It's obvious. Okay, yeah. It's like too perfect, and they maintain no.
Yeah.
How do you not? You look at, just go down the roster. Daniel Cormier, bum hand, Brock Lesnar, unavailable. He's the heavyweight, light heavyweight champion, right? Robert Whittaker is fighting early 2019. He's the middleweight champion. Tyron Woodley just told us surgery.
Yep.
He's the welterweight champion. He just fought. Khabib is 155. We know he's fighting next week. 145, Max Holloway. His team tells me not involved in that card. Maybe Toronto, right? 135, TJ. From what I'm hearing from both of those camps, TJ Cejudo, which is the one that they're talking about, not for that card.
Yep.
So that clears up the men. Cyborg is fighting December 29th.
That's right.
Joanna and Valentina are fighting at 125. And then, of course, Manu is 135.
Cyborg, yeah.
And so there's no one else.
Yeah.
There's no one. John Jones would be perfect. He's the New York guy fighting against Alexander Gustafsson. That is the perfect fight. And it sounds like he's playing a little bit of hard to get. To me, they got to get that done. That is the only fight that makes sense for New York. Anything else feels like a bit of a letdown after the last two MSG cards.
You have to assume that throughout this process, they had some kind of idea of when this was going to resolve itself.
Oh, they would have loved, yeah.
So you have to think that John Jones was preparing, and this seems like the date that would have worked out best. And it's a card that has been said that it needs this main event. I personally think Poirier and Diaz.
You think it's big enough?
Is a big enough fight.
Okay, what do you think of the 165 stuff that they're talking about?
The UFC doesn't have that division. If that is, I don't think that that's the way to launch a division, is to say, hey, we're going to fight for this new belt, and then the division fills itself in. I don't think that's the way to do
okay.
it. And
does that fight need a title attached?
No. I think it's a big fight.
You think Dustin versus Nate, MSG, after the last two MSG shows had three title fights each, this card not having a single one is big enough? UFC will not do pay-per-views without title fights. I mean, other than a Conor fight, they will not do it. Period. That's why they do all the interims. Now they're going to go to MSG without a title fight?
It's a big fight.
Yeah.
It's a big fight.
I feel like if you get John versus Gus.
That's a no-brainer. If you get that.
Even John versus a heavyweight. Even like a Anderson Silva, James Irvin type of situation. Anderson Silva, Forrest Griffin type of situation. John versus some kind of heavyweight, if he doesn't want to cut the weight, is pretty. Imagine John versus Stipe.
Be big.
Yeah, it would be big.
Not a title fight.
Still pretty big. Yeah.
I think Diaz at some point, maybe not now, maybe this time has gone, had as much drawing power as John Jones, if not more, easily.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think that you're in a bad spot with Diaz headlining pay-per-view. I really don't. I think the pay-per-view the basement and the ceiling are both reduced. It's shrunk this way, meaning you're not going to get as high as you used to. You're not going to go, you know, all the way to the bottom. There is a baseline level, and it's somewhere in this middle here. I think Diaz headlining is going to get you that same number that you had for the last pay-per-view and the one before that, until you have Conor McGregor and, you know, those main attractions. I don't think it's that big of a failure for having Diaz and Poirier headlining a pay-per-view. But would John Jones give it that little extra boost? Yeah, definitely. No doubt.
It is big to have him back for the UFC.
Huge.
He's free as of October 28th, so a little over a year. My daughter's second birthday, I might add. So Sao Paulo in the books. Your girl, Livia Renata Souza.
Fantastic.
Incredible debut.
Yeah.
Amazing. Taos Ladies retires on top. Francisco Trinaldo retires. Evan Dunham.
Yeah.
In a loss. Henan Barao continues to look anything but like Henan Barao. Charles DeBronx Oliveira breaks Royce Gracie's submission record. Sam Alvey apparently sets a record. I don't even know if he said it in this fight. I just noticed it in this fight, and then ESPN confirmed it.
I don't think it was this fight. I think ESPN's Greg Rosenstein actually talks to Stats and Info, and I think the next person had like 10 or 12.
That's right.
So he's way beyond this being the record. He's already had the record for a long time.
Incredible.
Now of fighting on fight nights.
16 fight nights in a row. He is like the quintessential 11 p.m. I'm falling asleep. This is a boring card. And here comes Sam Alvey.
Yeah.
It's like Groundhog Day every time. Never been on a numbered card ever. I'm not even talking about on the main card of the numbered card. Just like on the prelims.
Any numbered card.
It's all fight nights.
Yeah.
And he loses to Little Nog. Little Nog turned back the clock.
Yeah, he turned back the clock on that one. I thought it was a good performance by him.
It was nice.
So
after a 2-year hiatus,
been on the
almost
shelf.
2 years.
Yeah.
And then of course the Anders situation, which was tough to watch, right?
Yeah.
Collapsing, 6 days notice.
Look, I mean,
trying to like almost drag him to the corner.
There's been times after fights where somebody in that position hasn't been as forthcoming, willing to speak and come out. I have to take it at face value. Eric Ander saying, I was exhausted, which after that fight, I think has every reasonable right to be. I think we have to take it at face value and think that that was what was happening there, and that he was toasted, he was exhausted, and he was done, and that was it.
Yeah. Still, I don't want to take a bit of a break.
I get it. But I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned where I think that, something permanently was done where, you know, this is something to think about going forward. He was done. He was exhausted. And, you know, now he's going to lick his wounds and come back.
Anything of note as far as betting is concerned on that one?
Well, I had one pick. Yep. It was Talis Leitis to win.
There you go.
Interestingly enough, when that pick was happening on Monday, the line, he was plus 115. And then by the time I came out here to the show, he was plus 105. So he was an underdog. He closed at, I think, a minus 155 favorite.
Wow.
So he ended up swinging a great deal and becoming the favorite in that fight. And as we saw, rightfully so, his gas tank outlasted Hector Lombard's, and he started really taking over in the second and third round. But what a way to go out. That is how you do it. Now, MMA retirements are something to keep an eye on, but if he truly went out that way in Brazil, facing adversity, coming back, winning second and third, there's no better way to do it.
BJ Penn had a really nice post on him.
He did.
Saying that Andre Pettinari sent him over, right?
You did, like it? It was fantastic. Yeah. But what it makes me long for is the day that BJ Penn finally goes, okay, enough is enough. Yeah, I can walk away the same way.
Yeah.
It hurts to kind of read such a powerful thing, and now he's coming back against Ryan Hall. But what a great way to go out for Leitis.
Unfortunately for Dunham.
Yeah, he was. Look, I saw some interviews in the back with him. He is at peace with it, I think.
Yeah,
I think so. He's completely comfortable with where this is at. And another like underrated career, faced a who's who in this division in the UFC, has been around for so long, has ridden the highest of highs, the lowest of lows. A great career in the books for him.
What about me calling Shevchenko and Joanna? Come on, give me my props.
I'd say you made it. You made this fight happen.
They're still mad at me. And guess what? I'm doing you all a favor. This is rising the flyweight division into the discussion. Big fight, rising tide, lifts all boats, pay-per-view. It's not going to be on like some kind of, you know, crappy card. This is good.
The attention for this will be far greater than any fight that Shevchenko would have had against another flyweight.
You
and
want
it will
this.
Only help the division.
You want this.
Yeah.
You absolutely want this. It was the right call.
And if you think this is...
And those two together going back and forth is going to be so much fun leading up to it.
If you're a flyweight who's upset about this and you think, well, why is she getting the shot? Hope that she wins and that you get to face her then.
Yes.
Hope that that's
what happens.
You want
big names in your division.
Yeah. Well, not only is it a big name, if she's not worthy and she somehow gets it done, great. Easier fight for you. You lucked into a new opportunity. So I think this will give the flyweight division some attention that it needs, and... It will resume after that. It will resume regular course business.
This is what they needed to do.
Well, I'm saying if you're a flyweight who's in the division
and you were
grinding and clawing.
1-0.
Now it's time. Now you get a shot after that.
I got to say, I like the Bellator card very much on Friday. AJ McKee is a real star, 12-0. A brutal knockout of John Teixeira. Rafael Lovato Jr., Rory mentioned him on the show today as a potential number one contender, and Patricky Pitbull. Unfortunately, it was kind of tough to see Roger Huerta lose like that. But it was a nice card. Sets the table for this weekend, and I am so excited. I cannot tell you how excited I am for Rory versus Gegard. I love that fight. I love everything about the fight. I like the card very much. Always fun to see Rampage and Vanderlei. If they're going to fight, have them fight each other. Carrie Melendez, of course, the wife of Gilbert Melendez. And the beginning of the tournament, Koreshkov Lima. But that fight, are there any odds on that fight? There are.
Yeah.
You know it.
I do. Okay. Rory is a 2-1 dog, and Gegard is a little over a 2-1 favorite.
There's only one line out.
Yeah, unfortunately. I would have liked to see some more lines. I'd love to give a pick this week, but I don't like the odds.
Why?
I think Gegard's going to win the fight, in my opinion. I think he's just going to be too big and too
think
physical.
He wins?
I think he's going to be too much. I think he might finish him. I think Rory is a welterweight. I really do. I believe that that's where he belongs. And I think Gegard is a middleweight. Now he's not the biggest middleweight, but he's big enough and he uses his size effectively. So I don't think that Rory is going to come in and be able to beat Gegard. But I don't like it at 2+1. I don't see that. I think Rory deserves more respect than that. So, but also not enough for me to be. I think it's a dog or pass, and I'm passing.
It'd be nice if someone put out odds as far as the entire welterweight tournament.
I mean, I think there will be futures for that. I don't know if they're there yet, but I think futures. There will be futures for that.
Because I would imagine Rory would be the favorite.
Absolutely.
But like, I'd love to know where a Ed Ruth or a Neiman Gracie.
Well, that's where you get the dark horses. That's where you get the guys that the value is on. Because I don't think an MVP will necessarily have the odds that you'd be looking for in a future like that. He might, because he's so notable and they're expecting action on him, he might not be the one that you want to, you know, risk the $10 on to win the big money. It might be an Ed Ruth or somebody like that. I don't know if there's futures yet. Somebody out there tweet us and let us know. Yeah. But if there's not, I expect there will be. Once it gets one more round in, they might start putting those out.
Greg Hardy is fighting this week. They announced that. Kind of came together rather quick. King Mo versus Liam McGeary added to the Hawaii card on December 15th for Bellator. And like I said, there's Ryzen. There's the Bellator card. There's Cage Warriors in Wales. There's Sabina Mazo. And look at this. Jake telling me there are actual odds for the welterweight tournament.
So give us the breakdown, Jake.
Wait, are you on the air here or do I have to repeat what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Why are you so shy? You can't go straight on the air? All right, tell us. Rory is the favorite at plus 200. Wait. How could he be the favorite at plus 200?
Everybody's going to be plus odds.
Really?
For
why?
A future. Well, because you're betting on multiple fights. Everybody's got plus odds.
Gotcha. See, I don't know these things.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, see, you know what? Just when you think Jake lets you down.
He gave you a link.
He redeems himself with these odds, courtesy of our friends over at Oddshark. So what do we got here? No, I can't find.
Unsurprising that Rory's
Rory.
Rory
plus
sure.
200. Douglas Lima plus 300. Paige plus. Let me just, my eyesight is horrible. Page plus 600. Fitch plus 650. Fitch kind of up there.
Fitch could be interesting. Well, the style.
But he's fighting Rory first.
The style.
Yeah.
If he gets past Rory.
Koreshkov plus 700. Larkin plus 700. Any other fighter plus 1,000.
So they're not giving individual odds.
Ed Ruth plus 1,200. Neiman Gracie plus 1,500. And Yaroslav Amosov, who is no longer a part of the tournament. I reported recently that he was replaced by the good-looking Eric Silva. And so,
that is a good-looking man.
That is a good-looking man.
If you're looking to play it, you could get worse, you know, odds on a guy like Ed Ruth, who stylistically
might be
somebody can... How about the field?
What does any other fighter mean?
Well, it's weird because they gave nearly every fighter involved, so I don't know what...
So basically, if you get signed to be a replacement and I have any other fighter at plus 1,000, I could pin that on you?
Essentially, yeah.
Wow.
If somebody's
like
a replacement.
DC situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But it's hard. Like, they haven't said anything about reserves, so it'd be a weird wager to make. But
that would be a weird wager to make.
I don't love any of those guys.
Really?
Well, plus 200 seems...
Fitch is too high.
I think Fitch would probably be the best value, to be honest. Because if he gets past Rory, who's upsetting Fitch at that point?
Hmm.
Stylistically, like, he's got his tough matchup, and then he's probably going to be a favorite. But it should be paying. Rory is plus 200 in a fight with Gegard Mousasi right now. The odds should not be the same for him to win an entire tournament that they are for him to beat one matchup.
That's a good point.
Don't love that. So I don't see any odds out there that really jumped out to me. I'd like to see more money.
By the way, speaking of odds, before we go, our friends at Bovada sent me this in the middle of the show. New odds on the Conor fight. Khabib is minus 155. I think there's a typo here because they have Khabib listed twice. And Conor is plus 125. And total rounds over 2.5 rounds, even under 2.5 rounds, minus 140.
I think those are about where I'd see them. I haven't seen Khabib drop under minus 155.
Oh, yeah, that was a typo.
That's as low as I've seen him. I've been noticing and hearing and reading about the Vegas book saying that the number of bets is in favor of Connor. A lot more bettors are coming in on the side of Connor, but the bigger bets, the higher value bets, are coming in on on Khabib, which doesn't shock me. And I'm expecting Conor will get pretty close to even or become the favorite right before the fight, and then Khabib will close as the favorite when the big money comes in right at the end.
It's going to be a fun ride. I look forward to it. Enjoy your ride. Off to Bristol. Off to Bristol he goes.
Based on what you told me is waiting for me on the other end, I'm excited to do it.
The prodigal son. Oh, my gosh. The carpet that they will roll out for this man. I cannot wait to see it. All right. Crust First is over. Now we're at the tip of the pizza. You know what I mean? It's so weird. I had pizza for my meal heading into the fast.
What was your post-fast?
That's just like, you just got to go bagel, you just got to go cream cheese. But going in, I went, yeah, going in, I went pizza, and I was just very...
Oh, yeah.
I was very thirsty. I was very salty, very thirsty. I had like one with vodka sauce. It was just too crazy. I should have just went normal. It was Matt Serra taught me about it way back when. It's really good.
I'm sure it's good, but why are you getting fancy right before?
Yeah, I got fancy. I got too fancy. Darn it. I got too fancy, and then I was super thirsty at like 9 p.m. the night before. I'm like, what? I still got like 22 hours left of this. Brush your teeth a little bit. Try to get a little bit of liquid in there. You know what I mean?
I get it.
It's tough. It is tough. Anyway, great day. Thank you very much. It was great to catch up with my friend Peter Carroll today.
The best.
What a mensch.
I owe him everything.
What an absolute mensch. You do?
And, you know, you put me on a path. Oh, he squeezed me into that Liverpool jersey.
That's right. That is right. Peter Carroll, great stuff from him. Great to hear from Malky Kawa. Congrats to him and the team. Alexander Gustafsson campaigning. And how about Francis Ngannou getting all fired up?
Right at the end there.
Woo! All fired up about Brock Lesnar, Rory McDonald, big fight this Saturday on DAZN. Appreciate Rashad Evans stopping by. The one and only Tony McGregor. How much do we love him? Misha Tate, Eric Anders. Props to him. And, of course, Kayla Harrison for stopping by. Back next week, same time and place. Until they say peace. I'm out of here.